This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. U.S. Steel, part of the romantic legacy of the United States of America. However, in the 21st century, it is part of a worldwide steel industry that continues to consolidate, depending upon the country and the WTO. We come now to U.S. Steel and the fact that Nippon Steel of Japan, the fourth largest steelmaker in the world, has offered $14.1 billion to acquire U.S. Steel. What do the stockholders and the managers of U.S. Steel say? Yes. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, writing at Defining Ideas. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. Because after that yes came the part that I don't follow. Yes, said U.S. Steel. Yes, said Nippon Steel. Yes, said everyone working for U.S. Steel, including the unions, I think. However, the Biden administration said, wait a minute, hold on. First, national security, and second, a rumor that Nippon Steel was spending $14.1 billion to shut down U.S. Steel. Richard, a very good evening to you. A yes by private property to a yes offer by private property. How is this the business of the White House? Good evening to you.
Well, in this country, there's no such thing as private property, so long as you have the enforcers of the antitrust law being able to run the show as they start to see fit. And in this particular case, it may well be that the union workers at U.S. Steel think that this is a good idea, but the unions generally think it's a poor idea because Nippon is not somebody whom they control. So they would rather the sale be made to an American company, which is more decrepit than Nippon sale, in which they think that they could preserve those jobs. And this, of course, is exactly what Biden has always said. He says, I'm the most pro-union guy out there. And now he's trying to prove it by hurting particular union workers in order to give vent to the more powerful thing on the other side. So it turns out on the economic stuff, it's just a straight form of protectionism, but it's a form of protectionism that hurts American shareholders. It's a form of protectionism which guarantees that U.S. Steel will continue to decline because it won't get infusions of technique and know-how on the one hand and cash on the other hand and personnel in order to bring it back up. So what he's saying, in effect, is I'd rather see it die slowly like it's been going on instead of being taken over by somebody who could turn it around. This is part of the general sentiment that you see on the part of the general government policy here. The United States Department of Justice and the Federal Trade Commission both start from what I regard as a rather stupid proposition that efficiencies are rarely obtained in mergers and that what you're doing is thinking about increases in market powers that will allow these devils to raise prices. And they don't care very much about the market shares, and they don't care about very much about the way the techniques are going to start to change. The net effect is when they put forward their mergers guideline, they say a merger block is a good thing for society because somehow they think that if every party to the transaction is going to win and make superior processes, somehow or other the public is going to lose. They don't know who that public is because certainly the customers and the shareholders of these companies are thrilled about the thing taking place. So what you do is you see a mindless president beholden to a very powerful group with which he has strong political alliances. So that side of it is crazy. On the national security side, it's also crazy. How do you decide to increase national security? Well, the first thing you want to do is to have a robust economy, because the more robust the economy is, the smaller the drain that is going to be imposed upon it in order to create the sufficient revenues to build up the military, the intelligence apparatus, and everything else that you need to have in order to be able to fight a war. But one of the things about Biden, he doesn't really care about this stuff in the way in which he should. This is a president who thinks that the appropriate time now is to cut the military budget in real terms when we're facing major threats in the Middle East, we're facing major threats with the Ukraine war, we're facing major threats with the situation in the Far East, with the situation that we have with the Taiwan Straits and everything else, and he wants to sort of shut this down. So what's national security about this? It's almost impossible. You're not giving away technology under these circumstances. What happens is it's very easy to monitor this kind of process. You look, there are many, many other companies in the United States that are foreign owned, and nobody seems to think that they're a kind of a peril. So you always want to say, when you're dealing with these national security issues, and I don't want to pretend that they're false, is that the real problem that you're interested in is intellectual technology of one kind or another. I've attended sessions of national security people, and they are not free traders, because they know if you send off a weapon system to somebody else and it's sold to a third party, it can end up in the hands of your enemies. But raw steel, and this is the craziest thing imaginable. This is Donald Trump being stupid about the same kind of issue when he starts to say, I will never allow a foreign company to take over an American company, as if it's somehow or other immoral. On the other hand, American companies taking over foreign companies, well, that's just a form of manifest destiny. The system of free trade, the whole point is, it's not governments run by two ignorant men, Biden or Trump, who are going to determine this. It's going to be shareholders, it's going to be customers, it's going to be employees who are going to make all these decisions. And they have every incentive to get it right. They have no incentive whatsoever to get it wrong. So this whole thing turns out to be basically a farce of one kind or another, run by ignorant people in the White House, in the union movement, in the labor movement, in the antitrust division. American policy has become a shambles of protectionism. And what happens is, if you do not import, you cannot export. Because what happens is, if you need a specified technology, which is only available from a foreign source at the right price in the arms quantity, and you can't buy that, then you're going to have to put an inferior substitute in. That means your price is going to rise relative to quality, and your sales are going to be reduced. But they don't seem to understand this. The man who actually made this very clear 40 years ago, when he was a different man, was Paul Krugman, who got his Nobel Prize for trying to explain to people correctly, I might add, that the real trade that you take place is between developed countries, sharing technologies. The agricultural stuff is important in a way, but it's much less important for the robust long-term health of a nation. And so what we have is a president and another president in waiting, both of whom are going to jeopardize this situation. So this is just another American tragedy, a sign of a totally clueless government, which whenever it deals with all these business matters, whether here or in the antitrust law, as in the recent suit with respect to Apple, they're always going to get it wrong. They work like clockwork, which means they don't work at all.
Touching on TikTok, the understanding is that the House of Representatives has overwhelmingly endorsed a bill that would oblige TikTok to sell itself, that is its algorithm, to an American company where it can be watched carefully for influence peddling and for aggregation of data that can be used against the American people. This also is an obligation that will be taken up by the U.S. Senate, although not yet. There are objections, and the objections turn on the First Amendment. How, and you and your analysis for defining ideas say this is a close call, Richard, or it needs to be restated?
Well, I think it's actually a kind of a difficult situation, because here you have a case in which the hands-off attitude is simply insufficient to deal with the issue. And so the question then is, how do you deal with something like this? And on the First Amendment side, it's quite clear that the TikTok provides a very desirable platform for large numbers of people who present all sorts of information, which is utterly innocuous. And it is adored by teenagers and all sorts of specialized groups. And to some extent, that is going to be compromised. But, and there's always a but here, even with respect to that function, if TikTok is severed from the Chinese government, it still can continue to do those sorts of things under different ownership. You mentioned that it was American ownership. I think it's likely to turn out that way if the bill passes. But I don't think there was anything in the bill, ironically, which said it couldn't be taken over by a European company, which did not have any communist tie. And given what we just said in the first half, there's absolutely no reason whatsoever not to allow foreign companies to bid to own TikTok if they're willing to comply with American norms. So we're not quite sure. The free speech part on the other could be satisfied. There's also, of course, there's nothing which is a monopoly forever. There are all sorts of companies like MySpace and so forth have been blown out of the water by more recent arrivals. And if TikTok is shut down, or even if it's not, are there going to be domestic platforms that are going to try and work the same space? And so what will happen is, it's not a very important free speech issue if, in fact, you could find substitute venues of equal value and use to do it. And those aren't there quite yet, but they're going to get there soon. So I think the free speech claims are true, but relatively unimportant. The real question is, what are they doing with TikTok? People have objected and said quite rightly, you shut them down. It turns out Mr. Putin and his allies know how to get on Facebook and every other media in order to spread lies and disinformation about the United States. And that's true. That's not why one's worried about TikTok. It's the operating system and the guts of the situation that are very important. And if they can collect data from all these user bases and figure out how to sanitize it and digest it and combine it, they could get a great deal of information about how the American system works and arguably disrupt its operation in peacetime and, more importantly, even in time of war. And so the national security issue here is not one of saying, gee, we don't want foreigners to be strong. It's saying that the Chinese government, which you cannot trust on anything, is trying to use this to extract information about the United States. And if it gets that kind of information, it could turn it against us and our allies. Well, these are national security concerns that are absolutely bona fide. And so the question that you then ask, well, is there anything else that you can do short of divestment that's going to be able to handle this problem? Because you always want to have a compelling interest, which is served by narrowly tailored means, is the way the magical formula works. But these are the Chinese, and the presumption that you have to go in, and this is unfortunately true in the last dozen of years or so, every time China makes a promise, they make it solely with the purpose of putting you off and then breaking it when it turns out. So what you have to do when you evaluate China is not look at TikTok in isolation. Look at it as part of a pattern and practice of a group of unscrupulous, dishonest foreign government who are willing to do anything they can within their power to subvert the United States. Well, if that's the general background norm, you can't have a presumption which says, gee, they're just going to do this in a perfectly benign fashion. Maybe you can't unearth everything that they're going to do badly, but I'm sure the House has some information about it.
Richard,
and so then you're back.
The opinion is that China ByteDance, which is the company that owns
it,
will not sell the algorithm. They will not.
And you know what I think? The answer is then cut them off.
Yeah.
That's
what India decided to do. And the opinion in India is they banned all Chinese apps. But the opinion in India is that disorder attenuated considerably after we stopped TikTok's ability to maneuver and manipulate the population. That's India's opinion.
Well, it's my opinion, too, and I don't use TikTok or know it. Look, I just have the kind of basic presumption that in a system where a government is totalitarian, private property does not give you independent sources of information. And as you mentioned in the first half with respect to U.S. Steel, the reason you like private property is it decentralizes power and takes it away from the government. And the reason one has such an utter distaste for the Biden administration on this is it's trying to engage in more centralization
Let's race to Apple, which everybody can identify. Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution generously commenting on three matters before the Capitol and before all of us. U.S. Steel, TikTok, and now your iPhone. Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.